chance to have a dream, to open and run a bakery. But they took a chance, took the sweets to the street. Now they all have places where I'd love to eat.
Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. Welcome to the Rise Up Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Dick, and this is the show about bakers and bakeries and bakery owners and all the folks that work so hard, often through the night, to make the good stuff and share it with the people in their community. How are you this week? I'm excited to be back with another really cool conversation with a very interesting baker. Today on the show, I talk with Shiri Ruveni Ulrich, who is the creator and founder of Rising Above Bakery. Good name, hey? I'm going to like that one. Rising Above Bakery. And she is in New York, outside of New York City, right on the border with New Jersey. Right now, Shiri's got a cottage bakery, but is actively working on building out an actual brick and mortar retail bakery for the people in her community. And the really cool thing about Rising Above Bakery is that her crew and the whole reason that she started this bakery was as a place for folks with autism and learning disabilities and nonverbal folks to work together, work on the craft, come together as a group and do great things and be happy. And she's been doing that for a few years now out of her bakery at her house. And it's a beautiful story. And it's a really wonderful project that she's doing. So we're going to talk about that in a couple of minutes. You know, this is the time of the show where I usually share a story, and I am racking my brains trying to find a good one to share. I've been in a bit of a funk lately that most of my stories have been spiraling down and down into the gray ooze. But one really good thing happened to me this weekend, and it got me thinking ahead to summertime, and it's because I got a campsite for the summer. It's not as easy as you'd think. What happens out here on Vancouver Island, we have a lovely national park called Pacific Rim National Park, and it sits between the town of Tofino and the town of Ucluelet. And Tofino is the hot, trendy one that you might have heard of. It's the big resort town. It's getting more and more expensive. It's now, you know, royalty and prime ministers and folks. They go to Tofino to vacation. And I haven't been there in like 15 years, but it was like super expensive even 15 years ago. But between Tofino and Ucluelet is Pacific Rim National Park, which is gorgeous. And there's this long beach. And it's called Long Beach. And it's this long sandy beach facing out onto the Pacific with like crashing surf, and folks go surfing, and it's lovely. The water's extremely cold, but it's still lovely. And you've got beautiful trees in behind you and this long sandy beach, and it's a lot of fun. And there's only like, 100 campsites at the campground of the national park. And it's kind of one of the few affordable ways to stay out in that area. So on January 20th, is the big national lottery. It's the first day that you can reserve campsites at the BC National Parks at 8 a.m. local time. So I get up, set my alarm, get up early, log in, pour my coffee, and I get to the Canada Parks website, and it says, hey, if you're here, right on. Your name's in the hat. At exactly 8 o'clock, we're going to randomly give you a number, and that's the order that you're going to be able to go in and reserve a site online. And it's like, right on. And so I wait for about 10 minutes, 8 o'clock rolls around, boom, your number is 7,382. I kid you not. That was the number. It says, it's going to probably be about an hour before we let you in. And it's like, oh geez. Okay. So I think there's no chance, because I got shut out last year and I think I was number 5,000, and now I'm like 7,000, but I hang out, sit around for a bit, do some writing, do some emails, and then ping, my browser goes off. It's my turn to go in, and I go in, and as fast as I can, I put in my dates right at the end of June. And I say, I'd like to stay 4 nights. And I, from the 26th to the 30th, I think I put in. And it comes in and says, well, the campground's full, but there's this little green light where the overflow and the walk-in sites are. And I've never seen green on the site before. So I click the green light and it opens up and there are three walk-in tenting sites still available. And I'm like, yeah, where are these? And then one turns from green to yellow. It's like, oh, shoot. And the other one turns from green to yellow. And I go, ah, shoot. And so I just take the third one and, you know, I'm fumbling with the mouse and I get the thing, click, take it. I'll take it. And then it says, good, you now have 15 minutes to pay. So in that 15 minutes, I found out what it is I took. And it was not, it looks like a nice sight from the one fuzzy picture. Looks like you could get some light. Part of this West Coast rainforest is that the campsites have so much shade that it's really just you're staying in a big moss pit and like the picnic tables are covered in moss and stuff. But the picnic table in the picture, it was kind of fuzzy, but it didn't look too mossy. So I think we're going to be okay. So I booked that sucker and we now have 4 nights in Tofino. I'm open to bids. No, that's not true. It's not allowed, but also we're going. So we're going camping end of June. So now I just have to wait 6 more months and I'll let you know how it goes. So come back for episode 196 of the Rise Up podcast and I'll tell you how the camping trip went. All right, enough yakking. Let's get on to the main event here, the main course. Shiri Raveni Ulrich is amazing. She is a former speech therapist, has worked with autistic kids and kids with learning disabilities and nonverbal youth and that kind of stuff for her whole career. And a few years ago, got them baking and has eventually opened up a cottage bakery and is now looking to open up a larger bakery for these folks. And we talk about all of it, how she got into this, how she set up the bakery, what she wants to do next, and how the people in the community and the folks working in the bakery, what they're all getting out of this. And it's a wonderful talk. Can't wait to share it with you. So let's do it right now. Here's Shiri and me. Awesome. So very, very nice to meet you. I've been reading about you and stuff just for the last month or so when I got a note about those Tiptree Awards that you got there. And then I saw the name of your bakery and I thought, well, with a name like Rising Above, I've got to check this out. And so, you're doing some really interesting stuff for sure.
It's been fun. It's been interesting is definitely a word to say when we talk about that. I totally relate to that word.
Yeah. Well, and so you're in New Jersey.
We are on the border between New York and New Jersey. So we are on the New York side.
Oh, okay.
And New Jersey is like less than 3 kilometers
away. Right there. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool. I'm so curious about that part of the world. I guess I'm out on the West Coast of Canada. And so is it pretty rural kind of where you're at or is it?
Not at all.
No. Oh, okay.
Not at all. It's we are about 45 minutes from New York City, so it's suburbia life.
Gotcha.
It's, you know, the people who live in New York City call it upstate New York, which is really not. We are, you know, very, very close to the city and not rural at all.
Oh, okay.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah. I've heard of New Jersey being described as the Garden State, but I'm trying to figure out sort of where what part of the state that is, because it always seems so, I guess by my own standards, built out and very urban. So I'm like, where's the farms, the mythical farms? But yeah, oh, so cool.
Not around us, although we do have a farm right next to us. So we walk to the farm and through the farm a lot and do a lot of stuff with the farm, usually in the summer. But yeah, they're not around us. Most of the farms have become malls. Developers bought them for residential areas. So you can see the barn house still up there, but
right.
That's pretty much it.
Right. And this is sort of the support for the folks trying to get out of the thick of New York City kind of a thing, but I can still make it into town.
Exactly. So a lot of people who live around here commute to the city by car or, you know, whatever they choose, you know, back when people actually went to the office in the morning, yeah. They would commute.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Back in those times, I vaguely remember. Yeah.
Back in the day. Exactly.
Oh my gosh. You know, I was just on another call with a program on storytelling that I'm part of. And one of the coaches was speaking and she used the metaphor of, you know, we're getting to know each other. And so we need to take off our masks and get to know each other better. And I thought, boy, that's a really good metaphor for this day and age. And I don't know if it was intentional or not, but I thought that's a good one.
Well, you know, these days, you know, people don't take their masks so fast. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know. I hear you. Yeah.
It's hard. It's hard to not see people's faces, right?
Yeah.
And oh. Just imagine that.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, I'm working from home now. And so I just signed up for a co-working space just because it's safe enough to do that now. And I can go out and meet more people and,
yes.
And that could interact with other humans and stuff. But it's like, oh I'm going to have to work with a mask on all day, huh? You know?
Oh, do you?
Well, if I'm in that space, I will. Yeah. Mm. So whereas my wife works at a school. And so, you know, she's masked up all day, every day. And so she's kind of like, get used to it, buddy. You'll figure it out. But yeah.
I think you do get used to it, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I was really intrigued reading about the bakery and the reason behind it, or sort of the genesis of Rising Above and why you started it. And I'd love to hear more about that.
Okay. I would love to tell you that. Just so happened. So I'm a speech therapist by trade. I've been working with individuals with special needs under the age of 21 all my professional life, which is over 20 years, and love that population. Make me happy every day to see them. So my very last school position, which was for a few years, I worked with the older population, so 18 to 21, where they age out of school. This is a school district and have nothing left. And because there's such a growing population and growing need, there are not enough programs there. So a lot of kids that graduate from school, really, they don't find any suitable program, any employment, and it becomes to be, as the parents call it, the cliff, where you stand by the cliff and there's nothing there. So I was not fully aware of it. And I started learning about it as I was talking to the parents and realized that there's huge need for something meaningful for graduates that come out of this program, these very sheltered programs, and then into life and reality. But there's nothing much there in terms of leading meaningful life. So I love to bake. I've been baking probably most of my life, experimenting all by myself. And I've been doing sourdough breads, although very different than what I do make now, for years and years and years. And I just thought, all right, what can I do? And how can I put all my passions and my loves together in one big package and make something meaningful? And then, you know, years ago, when my kids were very little, I had a group, a mother's group here for a few years. We call it Around My Kitchen Table. And I always baked for them because that's all I did when I stayed with my kids at home. I baked a lot. So there was always baked goods and, you know, they love to come here. And they always said, why don't you start a bakery? And I thought, that's stupid. Why would I do that? Never. But, you know, it was always in the back of my brain in a way. And then when I really tried hard to figure out how to get out of this and how to make more meaning in people's lives, the bakery surfaced, kind of came back to life. And when I put a mission to the bakery, it clicked.
Right.
And I said, okay, now we have a concept. Now we have something that I can work with. And as I was thinking about it, funny enough, I was baking with my students in a kitchen. We started a cookie line in the school. So we baked cookies every week and we sold them. honestly, I think it was the worst cookies I've ever made, but because we couldn't use dairy, we couldn't use eggs, we had all the sensitivities. So I personally couldn't stand those cookies, and they were not real. It is something very real and very earthy. Anyway, that's a whole different conversation. No, but I will get back to it. So we were making cookies, and my nonverbal autistic individuals would be so excited on Thursdays because they knew it was cookie day. And we would gather around in the kitchen. We had a big island. We gathered around the island and baked and talked. And then when I just listened to the kitchen sounds as I moved away, I realized how these individuals, my students, who kept so sheltered in their own inabilities or own border limitations, became alive. It's like the walls fell down, and that it just I stopped. You know, I couldn't. It's just like now, I can't find the words for it. But it was so mind blowing to me that I said, "Okay, this is it."
Yeah. Well, yeah, because like once you're tuned into that and that experience, and you see the benefit, it's just
yep,
it's so compelling. You know, my wife Cindy works at an elementary school now, and she works with as a education assistant, like with kids. They're verbal. I think they're all verbal, but they've all got different challenges with their learning and stuff. And they're like 9, 10 years old. And when she comes home and starts telling stories about just little things that clicked, you know, where it went from, oh, we figured each other out enough now that this has gone from being a terrible thing for this student to being a good thing for this student. And it's like, and how good that makes her feel to see the joy in the other person saying, oh, okay, you know, we're going in the same direction now, you know, that kind of thing. It's a beautiful thing.
It really is. It really is. And when you see these individuals who really are not met in the community, you know, they go around and, you know, we might look at them a little awkward, or
sure,
we might say something. We have so much prejudice around special needs, and we don't think highly of their abilities. And to see them completely doing all the tasks and happy about it is just, to me, it's a wonderful thing.
Oh yeah.
So this is what this is what made me start. And just, you know, I moving forward, I was thinking, after we made these horrific cookies that had no soul life in them, I thought, all right, so, you know, what kind of baked goods is not only good for us, but also therapeutic? And there's something very earthy and very therapeutic in kneading bread and making bread, real bread. Not, you know, we do make gluten-free, but real bread that is earthy and hearty. And I, you know, I see it here. Whoever comes to Shea Breads with us leaves with a huge smile and completely calm after that, which is insane. So we're making breads.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Well, and our, you know, the number of professional bakers that I've talked to that their eyes light up when they talk about just shaping bread. That's a real thing for sure. Yeah,
absolutely. It's something I just had someone, I have a retiree who comes and bakes with us. And he was always very intimidated by a bread shaping. And then it was just him and me, because I don't remember why, but we had about 20 loaves to shape. And he got it, you know, like the more you do it, the more you get into it, right? It's your muscles learn that. And he left and said, "Shiri, we have to do it again."
Yeah.
So, you know, until since then, we have a lot of bakers who take his place, and he does other things because he does, you know, like he wants them to have the same experience. But it's very, I mean, there's something so magical in that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that bit of repetition, you know, like even yes, saying 20 loaves, you know, since Cindy and I moved out to the coast here, and I'm just baking for us again, like just the two of us, I find like making 3 loaves is no fun whatsoever. I need, you know, like I need the reps. I want that big tub of dough because if you mess one up or one's not perfect, well, that's, you got 33% failure rate when you're only doing three. I don't like that. So I want another try.
Funny that you said that because and use the word perfect because, you know, it's really, to me, one of the things that I had to let go is because I'm not shaping the breads anymore. And that's really what I wanted. I needed to learn a whole new concept of what perfect means because the shapes, you know, and it takes some learning. Now our breads look very different than when the baker started shaping them. But every time we have a new baker, you know, they try on the loaves that leave the bakery. So I had to like really let go of perfect. And I bought myself a sign that says, perfectly imperfect.
Yes.
So every loaf is perfectly imperfect.
Yeah. You know, and just to stress, that is any baker coming in, regardless of, you know, whether you're have a learning disability or not, that like, that's a universal thing as well, right? Like when we had our bakery and you hire someone and they've not done it before, you know, my shoulders would go up for the first while and it took, and that was my problem. I had to learn to bring it
absolutely
down.
Absolutely. So perfectly imperfect. We love that.
Yeah.
And that really goes with who we are.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, and so then how did you start? Like, did you sort of start this on the side while you were still doing the speech therapist work or how did that kind of take off for you?
So I quit my job once everything kind of like came into a picture that I could relate to.
Gotcha.
And
okay.
Plan. I quit my job. That was almost three years ago, to make room for, learning and, developing the business. And for 2 years or a year and a half, I developed the business. I learned, I took classes for, you know, businesses for entrepreneurs and, culinary business because I'm pretty clueless. And I put together a team of, we are a nonprofit. So, you know, I registered the business. I registered as a nonprofit. So these are all processes that take time. And then put together a board and a team of professionals who kind of filled in all my gaps, which were quite a lot. But, and then we were just about to start finding funds and looking for a location and COVID hit.
Right. Yeah.
So our vision was a full on storefront where people can come in and see us work together because really that's the most important part for me, other than employment and get great bread. So I was in denial and I said, COVID is going to be here for, you know, a month or two and we'll be fine, right? Little did we know. But I was in denial for a while. And then one day I had my spinning bike in the dining room. So I've been spinning to keep my sanity on while we were in quarantine or not quarantine, whatever they called it. And it hit me. I said, you know, why won't we start the bakery here? Let's turn the dining room into a bakery. We live in New York. On the border of New Jersey. New York supports cottage bakeries. New Jersey until September did not support cottage bakeries at all. So luckily we were able to do that. So I applied to get the permit. I got it within a few days. That was, I don't remember, maybe June. And by October we started fundraising for setting this space up, getting everything we needed for, you know, professional work. And my very first baker, Connor, is started in November, joined me slowly in November of 2020, I believe.
Wow, nice.
We just played around and took some pictures. And by January of last year, that's when we started taking orders. Okay. So, yeah. And so now we have, for one baker, Connor, we have 10 bakers. 8 of them have different diagnoses.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
So
that's awesome. Yeah. That's That's quite the operation in a first year like that. That's great.
It's been really pretty busy. Yeah, we grew greatly. I did not see how that can happen in a year. But we outgrown the space, and we're starting to look for a real storefront.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. Well, and are you baking you're baking out of your house for pre-orders? Then like people order in advance and then they pick up from you kind of thing?
Yeah. So we have our online, you can order breads online. We bake on Tuesday and Wednesday. You can pick it up from here, or you can go, we are now working with a store in New Jersey that is not too far from us, that it's a fish store that you can pick up your breads, your orders over there, or buy a little bit of bread over there.
Oh, awesome. Oh, that's really cool. Well, and I can imagine with 10 bakers doing their turns, doing their shifts and stuff out of the house. Yeah, I'd say it's time to expand for sure.
You think?
Yeah, I think so.
each baker comes here twice a week. And we bake bread Tuesday and Wednesday, but Monday through Thursday, we are in the bakery. We prepare all kinds of different things that we sell. It's, in addition to bread.
And so I'm curious how, when you said the opportunity you saw, or the need you saw to fill, was that, when kids are getting out of school and now there's sort of nothing for them, they kind of fall off the cliff in that. I can imagine that there'd be quite a bit of demand for like people trying to come and work with you now. Is it like, how, what's it been like trying to find bakers and that kind of a thing?
So we started doing the peak of COVID, or at least the first one, because now we're hitting another peak, right? But we started back when COVID was out there, and it was very difficult at first to convince people to come over and work with us.
Oh, sure.
Because people didn't want to get out of the houses. Mm-hmm. So slowly but surely, my bakers found me. I did not find them. They found us. And we need to recruit one more baker. This is when I'm starting to realize that we need one more baker to make our team complete. And I'm sure they will find us. So there's nothing really out there for us. So we're looking for it.
Yeah. Well, after we closed our retail bakery, Cindy worked for a while at a catering company, and they were also a nonprofit, and kind of similar to you. They were trying to recruit in cooks and kitchen staff from the community of people that had learning disabilities and that kind of thing, and were trying to live independently but needed employment and that kind of a thing. And she worked with them, and it was more of a soup and lunch kind of place as opposed to a bakery kind of a deal. And I just really, what really struck me when she was doing that work was just how essential it was, because, here's folks trying to make a life on their own, or life even like in shared housing and stuff, but you need income and you need something to do. And how do you make your way in life without these kind of opportunities? So it's just, I don't know. I'm imagining it's a similar thing for the folks that are working with you. It's like, here's a real chance to make this work for them.
I think it's for us, right? Well, right now we're all volunteering, so we don't really. But I think for the population that I'm working with, they have some money that they can get from the government, from Social Security. So for them, the motivation is much greater than just get money, just get paid.
Sure.
Because somehow they can survive without it. I think, I'm not sure, and I might be completely mistaken. But the lack of community, the lack of meaning, the lack of motivation to get out of bed is so much deeper than just, getting paid.
Yes.
So I see them. We always have lunch, even though they work here for 4 hours, if at all. I try to have lunch with all of them every day, and kind of because I'm a social speech therapist, and social skills are my biggest thing and I'm a pain in the butt, I, you know, it's like I try to socialize with them and really bring that out. And I see how that is coming to fruition, which is amazing because they really start talking, they start interacting with each other, they start helping each other, you know, and that is something that you don't really see as often. And it's just beautiful. And if that doesn't give you meaning, you know, I don't know what else does.
Oh, for sure. Oh, that's so neat. I guess another question I had, and you mentioned it a little bit earlier, was about when you said, I'm going to get into this, and you started taking, you know, both baking and business classes, and you formed a board early on, was what you were saying. And I noticed that on your website that you've got a good group of people supporting the bakery and the nonprofit and the whole operation there. And that's something that I think people hear about a lot, but I haven't talked to a lot of bakers that have actually done that. And so I'm really curious how that's been for you, sort of what that was like to get everyone together and perhaps a little bit about how it's helped with the development of this idea.
I haven't had a lot of experience with being on a board or leading a board. So I'm learning as we go. And I always ask questions whoever, you know, on my board or anyone around. Because I, you know, they're here to help me. It's been really interesting. The first two that joined my board is a friend of mine who I called and say, hey, I need to register this. As a nonprofit, do you mind being on my board? And, you know, she's amazing and she's very helpful. So luckily she said yes. And the second person I called said, do you mind? Someone has been, I didn't know much, but I've been picking his brain and he was very willing to help. So he said immediately, yes, which shocked me. and then, you know, people kind of found me and we, you know, like the universe sends you to the right places and send people to you as well. As long, you know, as far as what I believe, and it just, they've been really helpful. I think I'm not utilizing them as much as I should. And I don't involve them as much as I should, but I'm learning how to do that. I'm not the person who asks for help a lot, but I really do have to, you know, to ask for help because there's no way I can do it by myself. So they're very willing people and very talented. And, you know, it's great to just have a group of people where I can say, hey, look at that. We did this much money, or we have now, you know, whatever number on our mailing list. And it's just the little achievements that I have conquered. And, you know, just it's great. I'm very grateful.
I think everybody needs that kind of support when you're trying to do something that's downright scary, you know, like I'm gonna quit my job and do this thing. And it's, you know, you don't know at the start if it's going to be embraced by anybody, you know? And so, yeah. And now how are the sort of build out plans and expansion going? Are you able to kind of get planning for the future now? Have things settled down with COVID enough that you can do that?
Maybe. yes. So we are, as I said, we are outgrown our space and, you know, we want to invite as many interested bakers as we can to this space. So we are actively looking for a space to go into a storefront that we can actually create as a bakery to us. We have a whole vision of how it should, I have a whole vision of how it should look. But, you know, there's the scary fact that I am clueless about bakeries. So I need to, you know, I just actually had a meeting with my board, with one of my board members today who's helping me on that end. And he said, okay, Shiri, so what oven do we need? And I said, I don't know. I mean, I know it's big. I know it has to have spray in it. I know it. I know what it should look like because I use it a few times. But I can't tell you offhand, you know, how big it is or, you know, how many loaves we could. So that kind of, you know, I still have to research and ask and go and learn that. And then there's the funding. You know, it's like, what do? You find funding first, or do you find the space first? And, you know, if we don't have a space, we can really do a Kickstarter. So it's all right. It's all connected, but I'm hopeful.
Oh, awesome. No, that's neat to hear. And you're exactly right. It's a heck of a leap from going from nothing to building out a cottage bakery is remarkable in and of itself. And then it seems like it's a whole other quantum leap once you start getting into a dedicated space and more production and all of that. And, you know, I went through it and some friends of mine are going through it right now. And it's a wild time. There's kind of no easy answers, but you really nailed it. It's like, do I find the space first? Do I find the money first? Do I build the plan about what I would do if I found the space? And then it all just keeps on spinning.
And then, but on the flip side of it, I think I truly believe that it's all going to fall into place. Mm-hmm. You know, I might be super naive or completely oblivious, but I truly believe that it's all going to fall into place and things will just happen.
Well, and here's hoping that even the folks listening to this, because I know there are a lot of bakers in, you know, in New York, in New Jersey, in what seems close enough to me to be in close proximity to you to, if they're hearing this and are intrigued by the project and want to get involved to look you up as well. Because that's kind of the thing. Mentoring from other bakery owners is a helpful way to go, you know, for
absolutely. Sure. Absolutely. And that's why I love Instagram. I'm not a big Facebook person, but I love Instagram because I have learned so much on Instagram. I have discovered this amazing community of sourdough bakers that I never knew about. And it just, it's beautiful. And I do follow a lot who are now in transition or have transitioned into a big, and it's, you know, this, the amount of stuff you can learn on Instagram is amazing. And we receive a lot of love from a lot of people. And that really makes me move forward and plow through. So
it's fantastic. Yeah. Well, and I heard you mention, an email list already as well. So it's like, that's a whole other, your group of customers, your existing customers can be a wellspring of contacts and information and ideas too. You know, it's, I love how you do it. Cause it sounds like that's how you did it at the very start, was you start telling people the idea and good things can happen. So, here's to continuing with that for sure.
Thank you. In fact, I just have to say that COVID is probably my fault. For a year, I've been building and researching and learning and studying and putting all this stuff together, and everything fell into place so beautifully that the melancholic side of me thought something must have come, you know, something must come now to completely destroy that. And boom, we had COVID. So I'm so sorry.
Oh, it was you. Oh, my goodness.
My apologies. Yeah.
Oh, dear. You know, the number of folks that opened up, you know, 6 weeks before that, like friends of mine that opened up a few weeks before, a few months before, or you know, we're building, we're in construction in March.
I can't imagine.
I think the good news is I think we were in a bit of a sweet spot in our industry or something, like people still needed food. And so if, you know, there's time to figure out how to do it safely, people kept coming. And so, you know, that's, thank goodness, right? Like I'd hate to own a restaurant or heaven forbid a bar in this day and age, like where we are now. It's like the bars are the first things to close because the whole design is people getting up and wandering about, right? You know, and it's like everywhere else in town could just put the wall up at the front door and say, just come to the door and we'll give you food through the window, and it could work a little bit, you know. So
yeah, it's heartbreaking to see how, you know, business is closing down because of that. It really is.
Well, my goodness. Well, thanks so much. I really want to congratulate you, I guess, or just let you know how good your bakery makes me feel from all these miles away and what you're trying to do. It really does. I love what you're trying to, what you are building, not trying to, what you are actually building. And I really do appreciate you sharing the stories of
of what this means to the bakers that you're working with. And it warms my heart when, like I was saying earlier, when you can, when those connections get made that you can tell really, really click with someone, that maybe it's not as easy to communicate what makes them happy, what makes, you know, what they need or that kind of thing. And when you find it and it clicks, it's a magical thing. And so thanks for doing what you're doing, for sure.
Thank you. I mean, I can't be, it makes me happy. It makes me happy to be here. It makes me happy to see them grow. And I am so grateful for that opportunity and the ability to do that and all the love that we just come our way. And, you know, it's, yeah, I couldn't be luckier than that. You know, I wish I had, as I mentioned, Connor is my very first baker, and he would hate to hear that I was on a podcast and he was not invited.
Oh, dear.
the only reason he wasn't invited is not because I didn't want him here. It's like he literally lives here and I love every moment of it. But it's Friday, and Friday I don't have anyone here. But, you know, it's like I wish we could share more of, it's really not about me. It's really about the bakers and how amazing they have, you know, they are, and how much they have become. It's like, if I have a second to say that,
please. Yeah.
You know, when they all started, they had very little interaction in the kitchen, or very, very little experience in the kitchen. And my bakers can do everything now in the bakery, other than mixing the dough for the bread, which I do at 5 o'clock in the morning. No one wants to get up and do that, and I'm totally okay with that. But other than that, they are mixing everything. We make cookies. They mix the cookies from complete scratch with a recipe, like a bakery recipe, not a book recipe. They weigh everything. These are, you know, kids that not always have a connection to numbers. So putting something on the scale and understand if you need to add or to take something out is not always so easy, but they can do that. And they measure everything, they mix everything, they shape, bake everything. So it's really, I mean, it's, to me, it's mind blowing, but not because I didn't think they could do that, because they are doing it.
Yeah.
And because I live to see that, and now I want to take this and I want to bring it to the world to see, because they can work almost anywhere and perform amazing tasks. So I wish we could, you know, have them over and demonstrate that, but another time.
Okay. All right. Yeah, no, for sure. And thanks for saying that. Like, it's, you're right, it's important. We'll have to figure out how to do a video. We'll do a video uplink or something. And I'll have to start the YouTube channel, get some videos out there. And definitely I'll make sure that I share whatever, you know, as much as I can in with the show notes and stuff. So people even down the road that are listening to the show, they always know how to get back and find out more about you and all of that.
Wonderful. For sure. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, what a story, hey? I talk a lot here about community and the way that bakeries serve their community, the way that the community serves the bakers. And this has just been a really great reminder of how much the craft of baking and the camaraderie of working together in a bakery, how much that gives to the bakers just in and of itself. And it was so nice to hear Shiri's story and her crew's story. And I'm really glad that I got to meet her, and I wish her huge success in the build out of her brick and mortar bakery, so she can expand what she's doing and she can expand her team as well. After we stopped talking, I mentioned Bakers for Bakers as perhaps an outlet of a way that she could get some advice and mentoring and help in making this leap from a cottage baker to a brick and mortar retail baker. You know, I think it's true, because that's what Bakers for Bakers does. It's a free online community at bakersforbakers.org. That's the number 4. And it's an online community where bakers from all over the world get together. They talk about the craft. They talk about the business side of baking. They help each other out as best they can. They share their struggles and they share their little victories. And it's a really nice place to share and to spend time together. And so I hope she signs up. I hope you sign up if you haven't yet. Head over to bakersforbakers.org, sign up and meet the folks. It's a really good crew over there. They have a lot of fun. They help each other out. Okay, that's all for this week. Thanks to Shiri for coming on and sharing her story. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks for being here. I love having these conversations. I love sharing them with you. Until next week when there's another conversation to share, have a good week. Work hard. Bake lots. Rest when you need to. Go skiing if you can. Happy baking. Bye-bye.